C7. Number 20A.
Then I have real teaching. And therefore, can you see that once one is at the position as I was, that there was no more a teacher there like John Dolley, and there was nobody anymore there who would teach me anything? What is the position? Shall I say now this is the end of a period. John Dolley is no more here, that's the end of a period. Or can we see that the divine mind is going on to teach? And if the divine mind is going on to explain itself and interpret itself, then I can see, if I see that I have the mind of Christ, and therefore the same mind as that mind which is God, who is constantly to teach, then I can be a student who constantly sees something new. Because I have the same mind as the mind that teaches. You see what is necessary in study. You see why I have said, if you have an hour left to study, take half an hour of it and first go through scientific obstetrics and just first see that you have that mind which is the teacher and which is also the mind of the student, be acquainted with that one mind and first put out all material conception out of one's own consciousness, then the light can shine through. Well, we have asked ourselves in the 13th chapter on teaching Christian Science, what is it that enables us to advance in knowledge? And Mrs. Eddy says, you teach the wise and he will be wiser. Therefore, gives a sense through the whole text that we should work from the point of what we have already understood and be true to that which we have already understood. It is in this chapter, therefore, we have a few very pertinent renderings of how we should concentrate on what we already know. Here it is that she says, there is no excellence without labor in a direct line. It means something terrific. The moment the student diverts his fire and does not really concentrate on his own knowledge and what he already knows and let that be unfolded. If he begins to spread his fire all over the place and read all kinds of books, then not that the seed within himself cannot take root and cannot grow. It's an interesting point, because there is a sense that one should be universal, and under universal it means that one should read everything, that one should know all what's going on, and feels this is entertaining and a universal approach and a universal knowledge and not to be one-sided. But the fact is, I have never seen anybody who has scattered the fire that has brought forth something new, because the concentration on one point is that which really gives power to something. So that we really should feel God, the divine mind, should tell us which line to follow and then put all into that one line. Until perhaps one finds out that one is on the wrong track, that doesn't matter. But if one scatters the fire, one never knows which one is the right line, one never knows which line leads further, and therefore there is no excellence without labor in a direct line. Therefore, we would have such a direct line, namely the line of spirit, the line of the seventh synonymous term, the line of the four sides of the holy city, the line of the four levels of consciousness. These are the big categories, and if we channelize our endeavors into these big lines, we can be quite sure that we are really working on the fundamentals of science. Therefore, it is in this chapter also where she says that we must advance from the rudimentals laid down. Can you see? Advance from the rudimentals laid down. Therefore, take that which has been seen as being fundamentals and advance from the fundamentals. Whereas if we spread our fire to every little detail what happens in the world, well, we will never get anywhere. She says here, persistence alone wins the prize. Persistence alone wins the prize. Even if, as we know, the beginning may be meek and the growth sturdy, but its maturity will be undecaying. So you can feel how in this chapter really one is asked to go right back always to the fundamentals of science, to culture the fundamental of science, not to spread our fire. Here we have abide strictly by the principle and its rules. You see, this is really what makes a scientist, not to say, what can I know more, where do I find something more, what should I learn more, but actually to let the understanding which one has unfold in a natural way by itself, so that it is that, you know, our wider and further understanding always should be born out of our own loins, out of our own understanding, and should not be an adopted child, that we adopt the findings of somebody else. Just because the other one has seen something, what we should do is really to let the fundamentals within us unfold. She says that what is necessary to conform strictly to God's requirements, to have undivided adherence to principle. All that goes right through that chapter. Always that abiding by the principle, be in accord with that principle, stick to the principle and to the rules laid down, so that only in this way we teach ourselves something new. In a way, this chapter is quite terrific. I just long for that year when I once have to take that chapter sentence by sentence, subject by subject, subtone by subtone. Just think about this aspect of the chapter, where she presents to us the ethics of Christian Science. In the whole textbook, she never presents the moral of Christian Science, because science is spiritual. In this chapter, she presents the ethics of Christian Science. And so we are wondering, what is that ethics? What is ethics? The ethic is naturally the teaching of one's ethical, moral conduct. But when one reads that chapter, she doesn't say anything about the moral conduct, except one thing, that she presents a completely new ethic, an ethic that is completely different from any other ethics. And therefore we can see that if we are really scientists in Christian Science, not religionists in Christian Science, we adopt a completely new ethics. What does she say about the ethics of Christian Science is? And when we read it at first, we think, what has that to do with ethics? What does she say? She says the ethics of Christian Science is that all is mind, and that the scientist must conform to God's requirements. Funny kind of ethics for a religionist, because a religionist asks for a catechism, he asks for a book of rules. What are ethics? how to behave, what one is allowed to do, if one is allowed to smoke or to drink and to do this and that and the other one. And she doesn't bring up any rule of this sort. She says, we have an ethics, and the ethics is to have only one mind, that all is mind, and that the scientist conforms to God's requirements, that he abides by its principle. Now, can you see what that means? Do you see what a kind of ethic she postulates? If all is mind, if that is the ethic, that we have no other mind but God, therefore that we have no other spirit but God, no other soul but God, no other principle but God, no other life, no other truth, no other love but God. This is her ethics. And this is terrific. If you consider what then is scientifically ethical and what is no more ethical, and you just draw the conclusion, one is quite flabbergasted. And one sees that what the world calls to be ethical is absolutely unethical in Christian Science. You take that all is mind. What does it mean? That mind is the only medicine. Therefore, it's absolutely unethical to take another medicine than the divine mind. That's the conclusion. This is ethical in Christian Science. Now, think of the whole world. Do you think the whole world feels that they are unethical if they go to a doctor and ask for a medicine? I think, no, that's all right, that's common sense, that's intelligent to act that way. But if we take Mrs. Eddy's new ethics, this is not the case. The ethic is, therefore, are we going to take mind, for instance, as our only medicine? Are we going to take mind as our only guiding intelligence? That's ethical. Or are we going to ask people for guidance? That's unethical. Do you see the impact? Or you take as the ethics of Christian Science that all is spirit. Therefore, relying on matter, building up matter in your life, is unethical. You think that the people who build up a material universe and the material ego and the material thing and the material that they are considered in the world as being unethical. The world will say, these are really top people. They are really smart people, but not unethical. Yes? If we see that it is the ethics of Christian Science that all is soul, therefore it's unethical to rely on the testimony of the physical senses. Would you feel that the world would agree to that? On the contrary, the world would say whatever is not testified by the five physical senses is flimsy and is undefinite and is not true and is illusionary. And we come and have a completely different ethic and say, you know, you should only abide by one soul, by the testimony of soul, by the testimony of spiritual sense. Then you are ethical. And you just can go on to principle and to life and truth and love, and you will feel what a completely new ethics Mrs. Eddy postulated. To abide, she says, is ethical, to abide by the principle and its rule, which means to abide by mind, to abide by spirit, to abide by soul, to abide by principle, to abide by one life, to abide by the one truth, to abide by the one love. This is, in her sight, ethical. This is revolutionary. It's absolutely revolutionary. Therefore, we must see that we have a completely different concept of what ethics is, and naturally a completely different standard of what ethics is. Therefore, we have no book of recipe what is moral and not moral. The Christ may put us into such a situation that the Christ asks us to do something which in the world is called immoral, unethical. But the Christ may put us in a situation where he says, you do it, you do it. Because the Christ has its own standard, its own way. And therefore, we can never anymore judge anybody according to his acts outwardly. We can only, from now on, judge anybody according, is he impelled by the seven synonymous terms and by the four when he does something, and no more as it appears in the outside. That's quite something different now. The whole concept of what is right is now shifted into that oneness with the principle and abiding by the principle and its rules. Abiding by the Word, abiding by the Christ, abiding by Christianity, abiding by science. And abiding by science may make us act in a way that is contrary to the general standard of moral and of ethics. The Christ even says, I wound to heal. That's the Christ ethic. Can you see that something quite different comes in the moment we touch the science chapters? The moment we touch the science chapter, starting with the 13th chapter, a completely different attitude comes in and measures everything up to a science and no more to a moral, no more to an ordinary sense of Christianity, no more according to an ordinary sense of humanity, no more an ordinary sense of religion and churchianity and Christendom and so on. That's why Jesus was so many times accused, because he acted under a different principle than the people. Yes, so let's keep that in mind. Well, we have stated already the question of oneness and duality, and so we can ask ourselves, how could we state the law of oneness in here when we see really that understanding fosters understanding? So we could say here as a law, say, adherence to science fosters scientific understanding. Adherence to science or understanding science fosters scientific understanding. So let's elaborate on that law and see what are the aspects of mind and spirit and soul, principle, life, truth and love in regard to the way of understand, in regard to understand through a scientific method. And so I think we could perhaps see in mind that understanding science in mind would perhaps be the knowledge of mind, to rely on that mind already knows all. That mind only already knows all. And what is then in the second column, the effect, actually, that we get more enlightenment, that we have vision, that we get scientific leadings in that vision. That's what we ask for, that we get more vision and more leadings towards vision. Where does it come from? If we contemplate the knowledge of mind, the all-knowing mind, if we contemplate that, then we rely on the scientific understanding. Or if we take spirit, Mrs. Eddy would show here that we should rely on the purity and onlyness of spirit. That would be that which would bring forth what? In the second column, it would bring forth, really, unfoldment in divine order. So in the measure as we keep spirit pure in our consciousness, which means that we only have mind's idea and mind's knowing as our only knowing, that spirit, in that measure the order of unfoldment would set in our consciousness and the vision would unfold in an orderly way. See, that's something which we have witnessed over the last 30, 40 years very clearly. That the moment that John Dolly began to show us the scientific approach to being, and in the measure as we were nurturing that scientific approach, that actually the idea of science unfolded in a very ordered way. It was so that actually every step was again the seed plot for the next step, and that the next step again was again the seed plot of the third step, and so on, so that the whole development of the spiritual idea, which we can witness right from the start, from that single, simple order of the days of creation, out of that order of the days of creation has unfolded the whole structure of what we contemplate now as Christian Science. And it has unfolded in an ordered way. And those who have seen that development can see that very clearly, or we can also, for instance, see in Peggy Brooks' book on John Dorley how the idea at his time, during his 10, 15 years of scientific research, has unfolded orderly. If we would have a further record of what has happened after John Dorley, we would see actually that one step led to the next step in an ordered way. That at each succeeding step was, so to say, building on the preceding step. And so we felt that keeping the fundamentals pure, that spirit here, we actually could see that the idea would unfold in an ordered way. In soul, we would have to build on the sinless rule of soul. On the sinless rule of soul. What does mean the sinless rule of soul? It is what this chapter brings out, to adhere strictly by the principle. This strict adherence is a rule, and this sinless rule of adhering strictly by the principle and rule of our science has as its effect a greater sense of scientific understanding. Namely, it always brings forth a deeper spiritual understanding. A deeper spiritual understanding, even also a more definite spiritual evidence in us. That things become evident within us, spiritually evident within us. And we don't query them anymore. There is no more doubt about them. They are so definite that they are just as definite as for the material senses, the testimony of the material senses are. In principle, we would see that our understanding of science is the scientific system that we would have to investigate or contemplate, that we build on that system, that we don't abandon the scientific spiritual system in our research. And this is a great danger. I can see it, you see, that instead of building on the system, one can, as a method of investigation, that one can abandon it and then drift into meditation, drift into mysticism, drift into inspirational thinking, drift into atomistic approaches, and expect that something new comes out of that. So The scientific method is to see the spiritual system clearer, 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 clearer. To polish the system clearer and clearer and clearer. And out of it comes something for a higher scientific understanding. Out of it comes forth a more complex sense of the system. More categories reveal themselves. The finer categories reveal themselves. The other classifications and subclassification reveal themselves. It's quite terrific, you know, when one builds on the system in any subject. For instance, if we build on the matrix sense, perhaps I go now too far and perhaps I talk here on something I shouldn't have touched, I should have left it out, but as I've started out with it, it's quite terrific to see when one sticks with a pure sense of what the matrix is and keeps the indices clean and clear and defines the indices of a matrix properly and not just say Word, Christ, Christianity and Science, but defines them through the indices, that out of that study, like taking any subject through the 16 chapters and making a matrix of it, an enormous lot of new insight is being brought out. If we build a matrix, say, on idea, or a matrix on law, or a matrix on handling evil, or a matrix on healing, or a matrix on mind, or on spirit, through the 16 chapters, every time by sticking purely and in a pure way to the matrix always brings forth something new. Naturally, that's the purpose of a matrix. A matrix is a very creative thing. A matrix is not just a chart, a dead chart somewhere on a piece of paper. A matrix is one of the most creative mediums through which new insight is brought up and is brought forth. Or we take life and see in life that we should stick to the method of life. And that if we stick to the method of life, that it will bring forth, in the second column there, a higher inspiration. Their inspiration sets in. There the spontaneity of thought comes down. And it only comes after we have polished the system in our consciousness. Or if we take truth and see what are the rudiments laid down in truth, it's showing that there is a Christ consciousness, and if we build on that Christ consciousness, on that consciousness which is conscious of only of the divine system of reference, then the terrific thing happens. That fosters further understanding. Out of that come new structures. Completely new structures are being seen. So the outcome are new structures of consciousness that are seen.